dimensions, and you can have all kinds of fluxes through those dimensions. And the number of possibilities is enormous. Now, if you put this in the cosmological context, the high energy vacuum drive exponential expansion of the universe, which is inflation, and you can have transitions between different vacuum through bubble nucleation, or in the absence of barriers through quantum diffusion from one place in the kind of field space to another. As a result, we get this picture of an eternally inflating universe where the entire landscape of these possible states in string theory is explored. We live in one of these bubbles somewhere there. And if indeed this is the picture, we will never be able to calculate the constants of nature from first principles, at least not all of the constants. The constants we observed are largely determined by chance and by entropic selection. Some people get very worked up when they hear the word entropic on the basis that entropic arguments are cannot make testable predictions, they're unfalsifiable, and therefore not scientific. I don't think this is the case, as I'll try to illustrate here on specific examples. Apart from that, if indeed this is the picture, then the question is not whether we like it or not, but the question is what kind of predictions we can try to make in this kind of setting. In my view, the key problem in this picture is to calculate the probability distribution for the constants. Once we have the probability, we will be able to make predictions, which by necessity will be statistical predictions. There has been one major success in this program, which is the prediction of a non-zero value for the cosmological constant, or the effective cosmological constant. This certainly was a prediction because it was made well before the observational data appeared. In the last couple of years, some doubts have been expressed that this prediction can survive if you include some other potentially variable parameters, for example, the amplitude of density fluctuations Q. For example, these two groups said that you run into big problems there. I'm going to critically examine this claim. So in this talk, first I'll review the successful prediction for lambda, and then I'll discuss what happens if you consider both lambda and Q to be variable, and whether or not there is a catastrophe resulting from that. I'll also try to briefly touch on this very important question of how you calculate the prior probability, and the way what is called prior in this context is very different from what Andrew discussed yesterday. So let me start with a simple case where lambda is the only variable parameter. So everything else is fixed, but lambda, effective cosmological constant, changes from one place in the universe to another. The key observation here was made by Weinberg, who noted that when lambda comes to dominate, structure formation stops. So in regions where lambda is large and dominates before galaxy formation, there will be no galaxies and therefore no observers. Weinberg found the bound on lambda, which is about 500 times the present density of the universe, which is the value beyond which, above which, the galaxy structure formation is very strongly suppressed. And you can also derive a lower bound by requiring that the universe does not recollapse before life or intelligence had a chance to evolve. So this is the entropic range for lambda. Now, to make this more quantitative, what we can do is to calculate the probability distribution, P of lambda d lambda. And this we can define as being proportional to the number of observers who will measure a specific value of lambda. So again, imagine the universe where lambda varies from place to place. there are different observers living in different parts of this universe. All they're measuring different values, and then they take a vote, and we calculate this probability distribution. We can think of ourselves as randomly picked out in this ensemble of observers. We can represent this P of lambda as a product of two factors. One is the fraction of volume where lambda has a given value. And the other is the number of observers per unit volume. In regions where there are no galaxies, of course, there will be no observers, even if those regions are the most dominant in terms of volume. So both of these factors are important. Now, the volume factor is often called the prior distribution. But this is not really an accurate name, because in statistics, prior expresses our prejudice or ignorance, which maybe is an accurate characterization at this stage. But in principle, once you have a theory, like superstring theory, you should be able to calculate the volume fraction. So this is a calculable quantity. And the number of observers, of course, is also, we don't know really how to calculate. But in this particular case, as in all cases where the constants are not life neutral, like they don't affect the life processes directly, we can do pretty well estimating both of these factors. For number of observers, it can be a reasonable approximation is to say that it is simply proportional to the fraction of matter that clustered into galaxies. The idea being that you should have certain number of stars per unit mass in a galaxy and certain number of observers per star. So then this looks like a reasonable approximation. Now, calculation of this volume factor in string theory is now being studied by several groups, and we might hear about it tomorrow. But before we have a reliable calculation, we can use the following general argument. Suppose we have some theory where lambda can vary, and it varies in a very wide range, like from minus rho Planck to plus rho Planck. The entropic range, where density of galaxies is non-zero, is a tiny fraction of this full range. So whatever form the full distribution has in this very wide range, if lambda equal to zero is not a singular point of that distribution, the prior will look very much like a constant in this very narrow range. So assuming that lambda equal to zero is not a special point in the distribution, it is a special point for us because we couldn't exist if it were not close to zero, but not for the fundamental physics, because lambda is a sum of contributions from many different particle species. So we'll assume that this is the case, and then p prior can be approximated as a constant. Then the probability distribution reduces to this fraction of clustered matter as a function of lambda, which is a readily calculable quantity. So here, one can use the Press-Schechter approximation, which is a pretty accurate, reasonably accurate at least, approximation, to calculate this fraction of clustered matter. And it is given by this simple expression, error function. This quantity y is lambda divided by q cubed, where q is the amplitude of density perturbations at horizon crossing. So it is of order 10 to the minus 5. And c is a constant whose value is not important for our discussion here. But it is a known constant. So then, this is the resulting distribution, plotted here in logarithmic scale for positive values of lambda. And you see that it is a peak distribution. So once we have this distribution, we can make a prediction if we specify the level of confidence for that prediction. For example, we can throw 2.5% on each tail of the distribution and say that this is our prediction at 2 sigma. So you can see that this this stripe shaded stripe represents the observed value of rho v, and you see that it is well within the 2 sigma range of the distribution, which is a satisfactory agreement with the prediction. Okay, so basically this is the story of prediction for anthropic prediction for lambda. What makes this explanation of the observed value of lambda particularly compelling is that there are no basically plausible alternatives. Despite the fact that many people tried for many years to find them. All right, now let us see what happens if we allow Q to vary in addition to lambda. Then we have the distribution for two variables, and the prior will also be a function of lambda and Q. And by the same argument as before, we can assume that it is flat in lambda, so it, prior is a function only of Q. For Q, though, we have no reason to assume that it is has a flat prior. So then the full distribution is given by this formula. You have dp of lambda q, which is the prior, times the fraction of clustered matter, this error function, where y, as before, is this combination lambda over q cubed. Now I make a very simple transformation from variables lambda and q to variables y and q, right, where y is this, which is a natural thing to do since this error function depends only on y. And then an interesting thing happens. This distribution factorizes. So we have something depending only on q. This q cubed is just the Jacobian factor resulting from this transformation. And then we have the distribution for y, this thing. But remarkably, this distribution has exactly the same form as the distribution for lambda itself, because in the, when q doesn't vary, y is essentially lambda times a constant. So now we have the same distribution, but for this combination y. So what it means that basically we have the same distribution which was calculated here and the same level of agreement with the data. So the conclusion is that including q as a variable doesn't affect the successful prediction, except now it should be interpreted as a prediction for y, for this combination lambda over q cubed. So what remains is the distribution for q, and we can ask how does that agree with observations. So from now on, I'll focus on this part, distribution for q, and we can now not worry about lambda. Okay, so how do we find the distribution for Q? First, let me review the analysis of Grasser and collaborators. So what they did, they said, okay, let's take some popular inflationary potentials. The amplitude of density perturbations is given by this formula in terms of potential and is of the order lambda to the 1/2. Then the anthropic range for lambda, is, for Q, is between 10 to the minus 6 and 10 to the minus 4. We are somewhere in between. If Q gets too small, then galaxies, gas doesn't cool and galaxies don't form. And if Q gets too large, basically galaxies get too dense and stellar encounters are frequent and planetary orbits are disrupted. So Q should be somewhere between these two limits. Now, what these people observed is that corresponding range for lambda is very corresponds to tiny lambda, 10 to the minus 14 to 10 to the minus 12. Now, if you assume that in the landscape lambda varies from, say, minus 1 to 1, this is a tiny range, and they say we can use the same argument as we used for cosmological constant and say that prior for lambda is a constant, is flat. Then prior for q is just d lambda dq and this q. Multiply this by Jacobian factor q cubed, you get a prior q to the fourth. And that's where the catastrophe is. This tells you that probability for q grows rapidly with Q. And then the probability, say, of having Q 10 to the minus 4 will be 10,000 greater than the probability of having Q 10 to the minus 5, which we observe. That's the Q catastrophe. Now, what's wrong with this argument is that when you change this coupling of the inflaton, this affects not only the value of density perturbations, Q, but it also affects the dynamics of inflation, in particular the amount of inflation. And of course, that affects the volume. And we are calculating the prior is the volume factor, we have to remember. So we cannot assume that lambda equal to zero is a when you basically have, well, as we will see, lambda equal to zero corresponds basically, as lambda becomes smaller, the amount of expansion grows. So lambda equal to zero is a special point of this distribution. So how do we actually find the prior? Obviously, this is a very important issue here, but unfortunately, I don't really have time to discuss it. Calculation of this prior, the volume factor, is a very challenging problem. So let me just say a few words about it. So this is the space-time picture of an eternally inflating universe. This is time and this is space. Now, here, this region is the region of quantum diffusion, which is dominated by quantum fluctuations of the inflaton. These are pocket universes which correspond to thermalization into different vacua. So these are all different vacua. Some of them may be the same. Now, the pocket universe, this is the structure of one pocket universe. So here you have quantum diffusion region. Then you have the region of slow roll, where you have deterministic slow roll of the inflaton, where quantum fluctuations are just small perturbations on the classical roll. And then you have thermalized regions, like the one we live in. And this boundary between slow roll and thermalization plays the role of the Big Bang in this pocket universe. So by the way, from inside, this pocket universe is infinite. So because obviously this line never ends. It goes all the way to space, to time infinity. Here I consider quantum diffusion, but the same picture applies if you have bubbles, right? Then instead of this pocket universe, you have individual bubbles. Now, when people try to calculate probability distribution in this eternally inflating space-time, all kinds of problem arose. If you just try to slice this with a space-like surface and find the distribution on that surface, you discover that the result depends on what kind of surface you choose. Even if you let the surface, if you choose some surface and let time to infinity, once again, the result depends on your definition of time variable. Another set of sort of proposed definitions of probability depend on the initial conditions here. But in eternal inflation, you would expect that the universe quickly forgets any initial conditions. So now it appears that we do have a satisfactory definition of probabilities which doesn't suffer from these problems. And I refer you to this paper for the details. But basically, this is the probability to be in pocket of type J is this little pj, which, roughly speaking, is the density of J-type pockets at future infinity. I can explain what it is, roughly, this is what it is. And times the volume expansion factor during the slow roll. So the Zj is the amount of expansion in this slow roll phase of inflation, and cube so that we get the volume. For what I'm discussing here, it is only the volume factor that will be important. Well, basically, this makes sense, that volume expansion factor is present if you're interested in the fraction of volume occupied by given type of region. Now, to see what this results in, consider an example. take this very simple model, instead of lambda phi to the n, we just get quadratic. So this m squared plays the role of lambda. It's what is called chaotic inflation. And here, this is very well analyzed. The diffusion regime is at high values of phi, then we have slow roll regime, and then we have thermalization. The boundaries between diffusion and slow roll we call phi q, and it is goes like 1 over square root of m. And phi star is the end of inflation. Then the expansion factor can be calculated from this formula. It's exponential of constant over m. And the density fluctuations in this model are simply proportional to m. So p of q also goes like e to the constant over q. So you can see that small q are exponentially favored in this model, which means, in other words, that q is exponentially suppressed. So what does it mean? This is no good news for this particular model. It means that quantum fluctuations of the inflaton are not likely to be the source of the observed q. This is not a feature of this particular model. If you take any phi to the n, this also be the feature. Even if you take more complicated models, you may have suppression, you may have, instead of exponential suppression of large, of small q, you can have exponentially favored large q. But what is important here is that the amount of expansion depends exponentially on the slope of the potential. And q also depends on the slope of the potential. This means if you change q, you change amount of expansion by exponential factor. And you will have either small q catastrophe or large q catastrophe, one of the two. So what is the way out of this situation? We need some other mechanism. If q due to the inflaton are suppressed, then if another mechanism is present, that mechanism will dominate. And we know, for example, that curvaton type mechanisms can do the job. In a curvaton type model, the density perturbations are generated by some field chi or set of fields chi A, other than the inflaton, which are subdominant during inflation. So I will skip the very simple analysis here because I think I'm running out of time. But if you have n fields of the curvaton type, the prior for q is given by this formula, q to the 2 minus n dq. And for example, for n equals 3, it is a flat in the logarithmic scale. So conclusion, there are a few of them. One is that the variable q does not affect the successful prediction for this combination lambda over q cubed, which I think is quite impressive. Now, q, due to the inflaton fluctuations, tend to be exponentially suppressed, if indeed q is variable in this entropic setting. And therefore, the observed q is likely to be due to some other mechanism, such as the curvaton. And finally, I think this illustrates that entropic models can sometimes be easily falsified, like the model for q with variable q and inflaton fluctuations, for example. That's it. That's where I stop. Sorry, could you say that?
used to say that Weinberg's upper bound for the cosmological constant is a prediction of a non-zero cosmological constant, wouldn't you be led to predict that the proton lifetime is 10 to the 17 years, because that's the lower bound, anthropic lower bound for the lifetime?
In order to make any anthropic models are just like regular models. You can make a prediction if you have a model. If you say you want to make a model, a prediction of what proton lifetime is, you need your gauge theory, right? Similarly here, if you have a specific theory like string theory, where you can calculate the probability distribution, right? Then basically once you have the probability distribution, you can say, okay, if you think of ourselves as observers randomly picked in this universe, we are going to see some value somewhere close to the peak of the distribution. In this sense, this is a statistical prediction. You cannot say just on the basis that there is some bound on some quantity. Of course, you cannot. Maybe that quantity is not variable at all. And also, another problem is the prior. So if you have a model where proton lifetime is variable, and you can have a good argument what the prior what the volume distribution is, then you can make a prediction. But I don't understand this logic. You say that the anthropically proton lifetime could be much smaller than it is observed. And you're asking whether this is in a contradiction to anything. Is that the question?
Well, by the same logic that you said, the prediction, that the upper bound is a prediction, and if there are models, well, there are models that the proton lifetime is smaller than what it is observed to be, the periods of the bound. So by the logic that if it's being pushed towards the anthropy bound, I mean, would you have picked the model which allows the lowest proton lifetime?
Well, I would say that you have a lower bound on proton lifetime, not an upper bound, right? The upper bound is infinity. So you can say, okay, proton lifetime is somewhere above this certain, say, bound that you're mentioning at infinity. So it can have any value in that range. So I think it is perfectly consistent with the data.
To another question. Okay, I'll go down.
Okay, comment and a question. The argument for the small q catastrophe I made in the context of the cosmological natural selection model in about 92, 93. But in that case, because the reproduction of universes is due to black hole bounces rather than eternal inflation, the argument works. The argument predicts the q should be at the lowest possible value consistent with there being formation of galaxies to give us many massive black holes. And so just to point out that in that case, the simple model that you make makes a correct prediction. And so that's the comment. The question is, in the case of Weinberg's successful prediction and the successful prediction that you claim at the end, isn't it the case that the following is happening? And I'll use Weinberg's, but I think it applies to yours. In the case of Weinberg's, you could simply say Weinberg observes that there are galaxies, and he knows something about the theory of galaxy formation, and he deduces from that a range of possible lambda, a range of possible lambda over Q cubed. And that's, of course, correct because the theory of galaxy formation is roughly correct, and there are galaxies. There's no need to assume anything about multiple universes, anthropic principle, or anything like that. It's just an observation. It's just a prediction from an observation.
Okay, so maybe let me first comment on your comment. There is indeed, when I said at the beginning that in this setting where you have a very a wide range of possible constants of nature, that we will not be able to predict them from first principle, there are caveats. And there are possibilities when you actually can predict the constants. One possibility is the attractors, right? You can have an infinite accumulation of vacuum near some points in the landscape. In that case, you will be able to predict what the constants are. Another possibility is Lee's cosmic natural selection, where somehow the vacuum, which gives you the maximum rate of production of black holes, has 100% probability of being observed. Now, this is, of course, perfectly fine. What I think there is a problem here. The problem is that these vacua in the landscape will predominantly be not biofriendly. They will be lethal, because some of these vacua, it's very hard to imagine life existing in high-energy de Sitter or anti-de Sitter space. Now, if you have a single vacuum selected on the basis other than the existence of life, you have some, say, black hole production or some attractor, how did we get so lucky? Why is that why is that vacuum selected for totally different reasons ends up being biofriendly? There may be an answer to this question, but I think this is a serious question. Now, regarding Weinberg's argument, you know, if you just say that, okay, these are the bounds on the cosmological constant, and observers cannot exist beyond these bounds. This is what many people call entropic principle. I'm not sure it deserves this name, but this is trivially true, right? If observers cannot exist beyond these bounds, then this is it. However, Weinberg went beyond that. He said that if lambda is variable, and the only reason we see small lambda is entropic selection, because in places where lambda is large, there are no observers, then we can expect to be somewhere in this range, but it won't be at zero. So we are going to see a non-zero cosmological constant. So that was a prediction. He said that if this indeed what is happening, we are going to see a non-zero cosmological constant which may be comparable to the bound.
You computed the probability using the a volume factor. You used a scry I, a future null infinity, if I understand.
It's future for de Sitter type universe, it doesn't matter.
Because in many cases, like de Sitter, you do not have a future null infinity. You have
it's future time like infinity is better. Yeah, it's. But the thing is that when you go to future infinity, usually you do some drastic transformation to make it finite, like for Penrose diagram. And this particular measure is invariant with respect to that. This is what selects this measure.
In a generic slow roll inflation model, the amount of inflation is determined by the shape of the potential, while Q is determined by the overall scale. And I don't see why these need to be correlated at all in a large class of models.
Let's see. I have this formula here. So this is Q, right? So Q depends both on V and V prime. And
a simple model. This is a simple model in which V and V prime can't be independently adjusted. If you consider a much more general class of models where they can be, then you won't get this strong correlation.
Sure. Well, I think that generally, if you have, I would say that if you have a one parameter model, okay, no matter what it is, I would expect that if you change the parameter and the potential, then both Q and the amount of expansion will change. And the amount of expansion will change exponentially, right? I think this is the generic situation. I didn't study this on some specific classes of model. We looked at these power law models, and we looked at what they're called, hybrid inflation models. And in those both, when you take hybrid inflation models, you get kind of large Q catastrophe. Instead of being exponentially peaked at small Q, you get fluctuations exponentially peaked at large Q. But I agree with you that if you go to here, they say you have curvaton type models, but you can also go to single field models, but with potentials having more parameters. And it could be that there are interesting models to be found there.
Just about your talk.